Good morning, everyone. I'm in Athens. It is a morning. If you're at home, it's not a morning. It's an evening. It's funny the way the world works. This will be the last one I'm doing from the other side of the world. And I know it's 2 days late, too. So 2 days ago, I was going to be doing this weekly update from Santorini. And then I decided to holiday instead. I know, it's terrible, right? Now, I'm just going to try and make sure that I can actually share on the socials this video. It is live. Look at that. There you go. It's one of the wonders of technology. I'm coming back to myself from the PC from 20 seconds ago. Okay, tweet there. Tweet. What are you doing maths on? You don't tweet. Post. Post there. I really should check my Mastodon news. All right, back in business. So, yes, I am here in Athens. It was going to be a weekly update. I think when I did this last, I was in Oslo. And I said, look, next week I'll be in Santorini. I'll do it there. That was Friday. And I did holiday. We had a really, really nice time in Santorini. And for several days in Mykonos before then. Now, I told one of my Greek friends this, who I saw in Oslo the other day. He's like, oh, my God, like, why are you going to all of the touristy places? I think once we got there, we sort of saw why everybody goes there, because they were freaking epic. It was really, really, really nice. Mykonos, yeah, like Mykonos, you hear about being like a party town. And there was a little bit of that, but it was just like it was a cool hotel. It was a really good vibe. The town was really awesome, just like wandering through these little streets. And then we hired four-wheelers. And the four-wheelers were really good fun. G'day, Steve. Steve is there from Le Beaujolais. There you go. I think I've been there. Been to a lot of France. Four wheels are really cool. Drove right to the top of the mountain in Mykonos. And it's just really wild to look at a place that's had so much history for so long where yeah, you're at the top of the mountain, you're looking down, and all these paddocks that have been built out of rocks. And when I say paddocks, it's like fences, right? Like all these squares for keeping the sheep in or whatever it was they used to do. And you kind of go, how did they do that? You know, like several hundred years, like whatever it is, with all of those rocks. It's fascinating. So that was really cool. Took a ferry to Santorini. And the wind was 40 gusting 60 kilometers an hour. I'm working backwards and forwards from knots because I like doing knots. It was very windy. We took all the right precautions, not looking at the screens, having a soft drink beforehand. A bunch of other people on the ferry, not so much. So that was not the most pleasant transit of all time. Fine for us, not good for a lot of other people. It took that over to Santorini. And Santorini is, like, that's just like one of those iconic places, right? Like, I've got this album of iconic photos. Places where as soon as you see the photo, you go, I know exactly what that is. And Santorini is just one of those spots. And it was extraordinarily beautiful. I think actually the nicest we saw it. Problem with all these places is you get massive, massive cruise ships full of tourists, and it seems like a whole bunch of them pull up at once, and everyone jumps off, and everyone goes into the village, and there's these tiny streets. So when we first got there, Thursday Arvo, and you're walking down the street, I took a photo of just the crowd, because you almost couldn't move in the street. 7 o'clock yesterday morning, though, beautiful, lovely, my favourite shots. So now we're in Athens, and got here yesterday, doing the like the historical Athens thing. Our son Ari has been very into Greek mythology, so we'll go and see the Pantheon and stuff like that today. And then tomorrow, we will eventually be heading home on what I think will be the longest journey I've ever had. As I was explaining to the kids, airlines work in funny ways. And we booked this travel, I think November last year, and the theory was we knew we were going to go to NDC and we knew we were going to do the Oslo things and, of course, family and everything there. And then we'd do something on the tail end of that, but we didn't know what it was. So, all right, we will just book from Brisbane to Oslo and back. And then when we figure out what we want to do later on, then we'll change the exit location. Now, it turns out that when you try and do that much closer to the travel date, all the ticket prices have gone nuts. And you can't just go, hey, rather than doing like Oslo, Dubai, just change it to Athens, Dubai, and then leave Dubai, Brisbane, you know, as it is, and then we'll just make up the gap. And they can't do that because you've got to rebook the entire thing, which was stupidly expensive. And then I had this great idea. It's like, well, Oslo's 4 hours that way and Dubai's 4.5 hours that way. We'll just give up we'll just give up the Oslo to Dubai leg and we'll just buy a separate ticket straight to Dubai. Can't do that either. The way the Qantas lady explained it yesterday, she said all the tickets are wedded together. You cannot split it up. So it means we're getting up about 4 o'clock tomorrow morning to go to the airport, to fly 4 hours to Oslo, to sit around in the airport in Oslo for 4 hours so that we can fly 7.5 hours to Dubai, back pretty much over Athens, to wait in the airport for 2 hours, to then fly another 13 hours back to Australia. Isn't travel fun? Worth it, just sucky trips. Sucky connections. Okay, let's get into the good stuff. Because I do actually want to go out and see the sights today. Brand new sponsor this week, Push Security. First time I've had Push Security on. Stop identity attacks with a browser-based agent that detects and prevents account takeover. Try it now for free. Of course, account takeover has been a massive, massive thing that I've been very involved in, not doing the takeovers, building the tooling to help hopefully stop the takeovers. Certainly many data breaches have been prone from account takeovers. Push is a browser-based agent that detects and prevents identity breaches. Try it now for free. They do have demos in there as well. Identity attacks are now the number one threat. I think that is a reasonable conclusion. Attackers TTPs are rapidly evolving as well, so you need something that will keep you up to date with that. 4 out of 5 attacks involve identity and compromised credentials, according to CrowdStrike. It's fascinating, isn't it? We keep coming back to this challenge of identity. And the number of ways we have tried to solve identity problems in the past and now have to deal with the fallouts of them. As I often remiss, is that the right word? Say, it's a good time to be in the industry. Big thanks to Push Security for their inaugural sponsorship. Please go and check them out. Okay, back on the things, because I did have a big list for a day where I really want to chill out. Marek says, did a 10-hour stopover at the Dubai airport once, never again. See, 10-hour, one of my ideas for trying to solve, and I spent like an hour on the phone yesterday to airlines trying to figure this out. One of my ideas was I was going to end up with about 12 hours in Dubai. And apparently it's only about 15 minutes from the airport to the center of Dubai. I would be very happy with 10 hours because I'd go, okay, that's enough time to go out and see some supercars or something in Dubai. 2.5, 3, 4, 5 hours is just not enough to go anywhere. But, I mean, as an airport goes, it's not bad. It's got some cool stuff. Anyway, we'll work that out tomorrow. here's a fun one. This came out during the week. Yeah, Jake, volume. Someone mentioned last week volume was a little bit low as well. So I have a Rode Podcaster something shotgun mic plugged into the USB-C on the bottom of my iPhone 15 Pro. It seems to have been okay every time except for this trip, and I cannot find any way to turn it up. So if you can max your volume up there a little bit, mate, I'd appreciate that. And then when I'm home on Friday, everything will be back to normal. I'll turn you up, sir. Thank you. All right. Copy track. Now, there's this thing called copyright. Okay, everyone's familiar with this. And a lot of the stuff that is on the internet has some form of copyright on it that isn't always immediately obvious. And I'll give you a personal example. I didn't put this in the tweet thread because I didn't want to pour fuel on the fire. But there are organizations out there that produce content, produce media, that have that copyrighted. So, for example, Associated Press. Associated Press creates a whole bunch of news stories. A lot of the imagery within those news stories is copyrighted. Most of the time, people don't really think too much about that. And I'll explain how I know. I had an organization contact me a while ago. And they said, you've got 2 images in blog posts that were from well over a decade ago that are copyrighted. You can't have these here. I was like, oh shit, okay. Well, I guess I wasn't really thinking about that in 2010 or whenever it was. And I probably copied it from a news story and that was part of a bigger blog post. I must just be able to remove them. And it goes on. It says, removing them is not enough. You need to pay us money. And it was in the hundreds of, I can't remember what the currency was. Let's say it was many hundreds of Aussie dollars per image. I think it ended up over $1,000 for the 2 of them. I'm like, you guys, like, seriously? Like, what? I could just ignore this. And then you start Googling around. And there are companies out there whose business model is to enforce the copyright owner's rights and demand money from people that have used imagery without the appropriate rights. These are, I think legitimate is the right term, these are legally operating companies that, to my mind, immediately went copyright troll. You know, a bit like the patent troll thing. But organizations that are just out there to extract money from people for trivial copyright violations. And then you keep reading, and this other one in particular, it's not the one I'm going to talk about today, there are many of them. This other one in particular, the more you read, people were like, yeah, actually, I started getting some pretty serious legal notices, and it ended up costing me a large amount of money, much larger than what was there in the initial demand. And I got to the point where, in this particular case, I paid it. Now, it wasn't a substantial amount of money for me compared to the time that was going to be invested if these guys went to town in an industry that I think is shady AF, but operates legally. So these are a legally operating service. There is legal recourse available to them if you have violated the copyright imagery, and they are acting on behalf of the copyright owner. So with that in mind, let me now tell you about the thing this week, because this is where it gets kind of weird. I think I'm best off just reading what was in the tweet thread, because I'm a little bit tempted to read the... I'll just read the whole thing. All right, where was it? There's images and things that I've posted this week. So anyway, I get one of these emails. Now, this is from a company, you know, one of these emails demanding money for copyright infringement. So this is from a company which has contacted me before. And what I mean by contacted me before, how do I now see the whole post? Here we go. This is where it is. They reached out, I think, earlier this year. There's a company called CopyTrack. Now, CopyTrack seems to be based in Germany, hashtag copyright protection. And I got messages from them earlier this year saying, your website, bangbuzz.fr, is violating copyright image by having this image on the page. And this was very similar to the one I had gotten where I did actually have an old image from a news story, you know, way back when. And it was very similar to that. So I paid more attention to it than what I might have otherwise done. But I'm reading it over and over and over again. It's like, why are you sending me emails about a website called bangbuzz.fr, implying that it's my website and I'm violating copyright by having stuff on there? Now, where's the original one here? It's just a mess. I got so many emails from them because I got multiple emails because it looks like BangBuzz has got multiple. Oh, here we go. Now, this one was back in March. Authorization request. Unauthorized image use. Case number. Blah. We, CopyTrack, are writing to you on behalf of our client marketing... German word. Marketing Beratung... whose license and image rights... So this is all German. That's interesting. I'm going to pick that up originally. That would explain why copyright is German. Whose license and image rights limited to the territory of the Federal Republic of Germany, we are here to protect. Abroad, this is done by our local lawyer partners. Our customer has informed us that Troy Hunt is likely using an image without permission and has exclusively commissioned us with the clarification, administration of the image rights, and if necessary, the enforcement of any rights infringement. Images are protected by copyright law and infringements are actionable under national and international law. Please see the attached below for details. And it goes on, and then it's like rights holder, that big German name I can't pronounce, image found on bangbuzz.fr/blah. Online since November 13, 2015. This is the other thing. All of these organizations are going back from stuff that's been there for ages ago and is dead and provides no ongoing value whatsoever, either to myself in the case of the one that I paid or in places like this. So clearly they're just, it's just a money grab. So I don't like these organizations. I'd be fine if they went, look, you might not have realized, it might have been an accident. This is actually licensed. Would you mind removing it? Yeah, mate, no problems. We'll take it out. But it's a business to seek money from these people. So the point is, back in March, this company contacted me. And it was quite interesting because I was at home and I went to the bangbuzz.fr website. And I'm like, this has just got nothing to do with me. It's absolutely nothing to do with me. Though actually the one there, the title here is Body Painting No Pants is the Best Pants. Doesn't sound like a TroyHunt.com story. Anywho, went there, nothing happened, and I went back to them. I was like, what are you guys doing? And I kept getting multiple emails from them because they have automated follow-ups. And I'm like, look, at this point, you're just starting to harass me, trying to shake me down for money for a service that's got absolutely nothing to do with me. Go away. And eventually they're like, we have now filed this case. There's no more action. And then I get this other one the other day, and suddenly it all makes sense because now I'm not at home with my pie hole blocking from automated lists all the nasty stuff, which includes CoinHive. But when I'm in a hotel the other day, there's no CoinHive block. So I go to the bangbuzz.fr website and then my CoinHive message pops up on the website and then automatically redirects me to TroyHunt.com. So what some Oompa Loompa at CopyTrack has done is they've gone to the BangBuzz website, completely ignored the Modell pop-up, which must have executed, the JavaScript must have executed, because then it location HRS over to my website, to the article about CoinHive, where they've ignored that, gone to the contact link, found me, and gone, you have infringed our copyright, can we have money now, please? So I've replied to them sternly, and I've said, you just don't understand what's going on. I have created a tweet thread, which I've linked you to. Now, in the tweet thread, I explain exactly what's going on here. And I'm going to drop this in the notes later on as well when I publish this blog post. And I've also said, look, obviously what they're doing, I mean, it's kind of interesting that CoinHive is sitting there on BangBuzz. I find that curious. But I also said, if your modus operandi here is that you just go to websites with infringed images and then you follow any redirects and then you use the contact details to send threatening messages, if you send me one more message, I'm just going to start redirecting it to your website. And then you can send yourself threatening messages. Or, which international law enforcement agency should I redirect it to? And then they can start sending them threatening messages. But I control the JF. I know the referrer. JF? JS. I know the referrer. So I can now start to say when that Modell pops up, if it's a redirect from BangBuzz, CopyTrack, if this is you, go away. But I doubt I'll be that polite about it. It's just such a sleazy, shitty model. Jake says, I was curious about how you detected a crypto miner on the page, Troy. Is it a plugin? Well, I mean, I know the crypto miners on their page because I've gone to their page and I've literally seen the source code. It's in the tweet thread. Marek says, should have added that any future correspondence will attract an hourly fee. Yeah, well, then what are the chances of enforcing that? And this is, so many people are like, just ignore it. Well, unfortunately, if you just ignore it, there is legal recourse because whilst they are of the belief that they're representing the copyright holder and I'm the copyright violator, they will pursue. And we've seen this. If you go through and Google these copyright trolls, you'll see that this is something that happens. And I do not want to burn that time. Someone else was like, no, you should do it, man, and go to court and then take them for costs. It's like, I'm not going to go to Germany and go to court with a copyright troll who doesn't know how to follow a redirect or read a page. Anyway, it's painful. John, not sure if you remember me from 1999 DPS Solutions Day. You and Angela gave me my first job. Wow, that's a, trippy to some of Foster's such. Oh man, that's wild. Hey, send me a separate message, John. That is well and truly a previous life. Many previous lives? That's cool. Send me a message, contact link on TroyHunt.com. Don't ask for copyright money. Thank you. All right, what else is happening here? Zadig and Voltaire data breach. Now, because I'm going to be sitting on a plane for so long, three planes for so long, over the next couple of days, I think I'm going to write up a bigger blog post about sort of like the state of data breach disclosure. But Zadig and Voltaire is an interesting one. Now, I didn't know who they were. I had to ask Charlotte. So they're a French fashion brand. They've had a data breach. Someone sent me their data. I got in touch with them. And I'm not sure to pick the right words to say here. There's about 600,000 odd accounts. Not massive in terms of a data breach, but still a breach, still customer data floating around there. They knew about it. they confirmed it. Their words were something to the effect of, all appropriate measures have been taken. I asked for a copy of the disclosure notice I've sent people. there is not one. And they have reasons for why there's not one. Now, interesting, they are a French company. They are banging the heart of like GDPR disclosure, everything else. One thing that's something a lot of people don't realize is that that doesn't mandate that they have to notify impacted individuals. Their local regulator, CNIL in this case, they would have to notify, and I believe they have, I'm just trying to remember from the thread, but the individuals themselves sound like they haven't been notified for reasons. Now, I wondered after loading this, it's not a massive one, but I wondered after loading this if maybe we would have seen some angry Zadig and Voltaire customers reach out and go, hey guys, where's your disclosure notice? Because it's all the usual stuff like names and addresses and phone numbers and things. But it looks like they did not notify, and that was a conscious decision. So anyway, it's in have I been pwned. It's another very sizable one I'm dealing with at the moment that has been in the press. I just got to finish the verification, which is hard to do when I'm away on holidays as well. Finish the verification, and then I think that one will go out just after I get home. But that is in the tens of millions, so that will be noteworthy, and it will mess up my week when I get home, no doubt. Last one here, because I think this is really interesting. sorry, I just saw Joel's message here. At least it wasn't a truck and trailer going up the M1. I have a sense this is to do with local news that I have been out of tune with this last couple of weeks. Last one here, Kaspersky. Now, this one got some people very riled up. And it was almost like a polarizing thing. Let's just talk about what happened. And then we'll get into the ins and outs of it. Everyone knows Kaspersky. It is, I would say, almost a household name. Obviously, they're antivirus products. Also probably almost a household name because they were splashed all over Ferraris in Formula One up until just over 2 years ago. I think it was about March 2022, just after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, that they pulled the sponsorship Ferrari did, because it wasn't a good look, let's be honest, which is what sort of leads us into this whole discussion here. Now, the US has decided that Kaspersky can no longer sell its products in the country. And I've got a message here from Kaspersky, which I've shared on the tweet thread. Kaspersky is aware of a decision by the US Department of Commerce to prohibit the usage of Kaspersky software in the United States. This decision does not affect the company's ability to sell and promote cyber threat intelligence offerings and or trainings in the US, despite proposing a system... the company does not affect the company's ability to sell, prohibit the usage. My understanding from all the reading of the other press as well is it was very much about, look, Kaspersky is effectively dead in the water in the US. But what's interesting here is Kaspersky has four paras worth of, we've invested huge amounts in transparency. If you look at what they've been doing over recent years, doing things like trying to move a lot of stuff out of Russia into other countries, trying to really beat the transparency drum such that they're demonstrating that they're not under potential Russian government influence. Obviously, the US has gone, nah, not enough, we're binning you. Now, I put a tweet here. So I think there are many, many different nuances to this, but the two things that sort of stuck for me. So number one, Kaspersky has got thousands of people working for them around the world. Many people from there I've spoken to in the past. I mean, people pretty much like you and I. InfoSec individuals working to feed their families, doing legitimate work. So they've got a lot of people around the world. A decision like this will impact a bunch of those people. I would imagine the US is one of the biggest, if not the biggest market that Kaspersky has. It is a massive, massive, they have a massive, massive presence there, certainly have had. So pulling the pin on being able to sell into the US is huge. Now, I'm not sure if there are other Western countries that will follow that as well. That wouldn't surprise me in the least. And if you think about all the Huawei things we've seen over the years as well, the Chinese maker of 5G telecommunications equipment, similar sort of thing. We're worried about putting infrastructure from an adversarial nation in positions of privilege. An antivirus isn't a position of privilege. By its very nature, it needs to be able to look at processes running on a machine well beyond what notepad.exe should be able to do. So they're there in this position of privilege. Adversarial nation, obviously things not getting any better on that front. Pulling the pin on that is going to impact a whole bunch of people that are not in Russia at all, or have no political allegiance whatsoever to Putin, or are supportive of the invasion or whatever else it may be. The bunch of people got nothing to do with it, and they'll be impacted by this. And I think the tweet I posted was something to the effect of being sympathetic to that. However, this is the key point. Regardless of how many promises are made by the folks at Kaspersky, there is no way in the world there can't be some sort of influence when you have not just individuals in control of the organization within the scope of Russia, but the individuals' families. And I think Patrick Gray on Risky Business has been very good at commenting on this in the past. He said, look, if the regime so decides and they're going to go and pick up your family and say, we're going to start doing nasty things until you do ABC with your software, like, what are you going to do? That is an absolute real risk, particularly in a, I guess, the sort of characters that they seem to be in control in Russia. So this doesn't really surprise me, and I think it's a reasonable reaction, and it will have impact on individuals as well. Individuals who, by any reasonable measure, are completely unrelated to the regime and not supportive at all of what's going on. And most people are like, yeah, you know, that seems reasonable. But there are just a couple of folks here who's just, it went all Godwin's law very quickly, that if any argument goes on for long enough, it quickly descends into comparisons to Nazis. And very quickly, people are like, well, that's basically saying people that were in the Nazi party, you feel sympathetic towards. No. If you've got someone who's, let's say they're born and raised in the US and they're working in an infosec capacity, or they're working in a marketing capacity or a sales capacity or something, and they're working for this company that's been around for decades, has been very mainstream, has literally been splashed all over the F1, as I said before, and then this decision comes and kills your job and now you need to find another way to feed your family, I feel sympathetic to that. I think that's very reasonable. That doesn't in any way mean that they're supportive of Putin invading Ukraine. It just seems to be a disconnect there, which is frustrating. And I started writing a follow-up tweet yesterday, and then I realized that was only going to mess up my holiday. So I'm not going to send it. Try to explain what I just explained verbally. Look, it's a little bit of a mess. I see why it's necessary. I also lament the fact that we're getting into this continued balkanization of the Russia things and the China things and then the Western things. And got to have your own operating system here and can't trust the stuff from these guys over there. It's a little bit of a shame when at the end of the day we all end up on the same internet together. But that's politics, right? Okay, what else here? Jake says, Kaspersky partnered with Ubisoft for some narrative consultation, which was interesting. Okay. Lance is back to the truck in the M1. I caught alive. No, that's a different thing. What was the truck? First time in months. G'day, Lance. Thank you for joining. Why are they banned, though? Says Simet, because of the potential risk of influence from a government that is not playing very friendly with the West. And you could argue the other side isn't playing. They don't get along. And having a foothold in millions of desktops, because this is the other thing. I mean, antivirus by definition, is going to update its definitions. It's software in the modern era, so it's going to self-repair and self-update to newer versions as well. So you end up with a pipeline of being able to deliver software down to millions of desktop machines across the country, and there are people in control of the organization that could be subject to influence by a foreign state that's very adversarial at the moment. I think that's a good summary. Callum says, would you mind adding all text images screenshots when you tweet them? I know it's extra work for you, but would make a big difference to me and other blind... Oh, alt text. Yeah, okay, got you. Yep, understood, Callum. You're right. That's something I need to think of more. I shall try and do better on that front. And at the very least, try and explain it better in the tweet itself. Martin, Kaspersky used to have a massive R&D office in the next town in Software HQ in the UK. I think that's gone since the UK office ban. And this is the thing, like that. what I think a lot of people miss with big companies, whether it's Kaspersky or someone, some big company from your own home that people like to disparagingly talk about because that company has a lot of money. They employ everything from, you know, the folks, if it's an R&D center, that work there in R&D, to the people that clean the offices, to the people that do the garden, to maintain the buildings. Like they're massive parts of communities that that when they shut down and disappear, they do leave a whole bunch of people that may have never even set foot out of the country, leave them high and dry and have to go and find other ways. If you're not sympathetic to those people because you don't like what Putin's doing with Ukraine, you're kind of missing the point. The game is over. Hello, a bit late to the party. Well, yep, thanks. Just about to finish and go and look at Athens. Jake says, didn't Kaspersky get accused of taking NSA contractors' tools in the past? Possibly. I don't know. I've never met Eugene. I know he follows me on Twitter, and I know that were it to be previous years, I'm sure he'd end up in the same place at the same time. And maybe he's a really interesting person. I know a lot of people have said, well, he went to the school of the KGB. I'm not sure that it's quite that simple. But it's the internet. Everyone's an expert. So maybe he did. I don't know. But yeah, look, it's just, it's a shame because there are innocent people caught up in it. But then again, there are many other antivirus products out there if you want to go and use those. I don't think that by binning, you would imagine that by binning something like Huawei, which is one of the key players in manufacturing the telecommunications equipment countries need for rollouts of like 5G networks, that would be a really hard, impactful thing. Much more so, surely, than banning an antivirus company for which there are multiple alternatives. Jake says, trust is a fragile thing. Yeah, totally right. It's a little bit like that. There's a saying, something to the effect of trust taking a very, very long time to build up and then a very, very short time to erode. And you'd have to imagine that after this, I can't see a point anywhere in the foreseeable future where Kaspersky is trusted to be installed again. Not least of which, because even if you're in a part of the world that hasn't yet binned them, you'd be looking at what's going on and going, out of the different horses in this AV race, is that the one that I want to back now, given the risks? So I can't imagine it's going to do good things for their business. All right, folks, I'm going to wrap this up. I'm going to go see the final Greece sites before I start getting on those long plane flights home, and then I'll come to you. I'll try and do it on Friday this time. Come to you from home on Friday and talk about all the other weird stuff that happens between now and then. Thanks, everyone. See you later.